Join us Saturday, November 5th, 2022 for our favorite event of the year, Extra Life, where we stream video games for 24 hours to raise money for kids in need.
This year, we'll be streaming a wide variety of games, including Crash Team Racing, Killer Queen Black, Multiverses, Rock Band, and a whole lot more.
We also have lots of exciting incentives and milestones set up. Every time you donate, you can cause shenanigans on stream or enter in for a chance to win some of our amazing prizes.
All proceeds will benefit the Janet Weiss Children's Hospital at Geisinger.
We hope you come out and hang out with us as we help the big, beautiful kids of Geisinger.
But until then,
we'll see you in the future. Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting episode of Cast to the Past, the time-traveling podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. And today is the first of our horror anthology, Spooky Games Month.
Yes.
My name is Josh.
And I'm Tom, live here from the Elephant Graveyard.
This is it, the first episode.
Yeah, brand new set.
We're in person?
I know.
The second time. Second time it's ever happened.
Incredible. Just think, we relaunched at the beginning of the year, and then we had several months of nothing because everything went tits up.
Yep.
But now the actual relaunch continues with the, yes, this is the Elephant Graveyard, our brand new set, and we're happy to have you all here.
Mm-hmm. And today, we're kicking off Spooky Games Month with Until Dawn.
Yes, the interactive horror adventure drama from Supermassive Games. Until Dawn was released on August 25th, 2015 on the PlayStation 4, developed by Supermassive Games, published by Sony Computer Entertainment, written by Larry Fessenden and Graham Resnick, composed by Jason Graves, produced by Pete Samuels, directed by Will Biles and Nick Bowen. Now, why am I going into this much detail with the kind of above-the-line talent? Well, because this is borderline a movie.
Yeah, Josh. I was going to say, this is probably the closest thing to a movie that we've played at all on the show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's a walking simulator, wow, Tom.
Wow. It's just a giant cutscene with QuickTime events.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah, this game stars Hayden Panettiere of Heroes fame.
Oh, I got the whole cast. Let's do it.
Okay.
Yes. So, as you said, the once and future hero.
Star of Nashville.
Of course, we all love Nashville. Big Nashville fans here. The only time in history where Hayden Panettiere will probably get billing above this person, Academy Award winner Rami Malek.
Yep.
As Josh.
What?
It was actually so
playing as me.
It was actually so funny this whole game. Anytime they were like Josh, I'm like, ugh. Like, when you have a deep Josh in your life, it's weird. But yes, of course,
everyone needs a deep Josh in their life.
But Rami Malek, Bohemian Rhapsody, Mr. Robot.
Yep.
Next we have
Night at the Museum.
Oh, I've never seen I've never seen those movies.
Okay.
Who is he in those?
King Tut?
Yeah, that tracks. Next we have Noah Fleiss as Chris. And he seems to, mostly from what I could find, he's like a career character actor. He was in some episodes of Law and Order SVU, Fringe, Blue Bloods. Josh, do you know who Brent Dalton as Mike? Do you know who Brent Dalton is?
No. I mean, he played Mike or Michael in this game.
I think he prefers Mike.
Okay.
But he was Grant Ward on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Do you remember Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? No, nobody remembers Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Exactly. But did you actually watch it?
No.
No? I gave about three or four episodes in and I gave up. His character, he was kind of introduced as like the all-American boy at the beginning of the show. And then after the Winter Soldier twist, it turns out he was a Hydra sleeper all along.
Oh, no.
The character we cared about.
Yeah.
Megan Martin as Jessica. She had a big early break in her career in Disney's Camp Rock, and she has a pretty noteworthy gaming voiceover role. Josh, do you know what it is?
I don't.
She is Naminé throughout the Kingdom Hearts series.
Hey, speaking of, do you like Kingdom Hearts?
No.
Oh, do you like the music to Kingdom Hearts?
No.
You should listen to this. No, that's an ongoing joke because that happened to me at a retro video game store that we went to a couple of weeks ago. And yeah.
The guy was really trying to push Kingdom Hearts on Josh, and Josh is not a fan.
Are you a big fan of Kingdom Hearts?
Galadriel Steinman as Ashley.
First off, can we just say that's a badass name?
Absolutely. In her wiki bio, when I looked her up, she was named after Galadriel from Lord of the Rings. So big nerds in her family.
Oh.
And her background in acting, another character actor, NCIS, This Is Us, and Glee. Nicole Sakura as Emily. And she is apparently part of the main cast of NBC's Superstore. You ever see that show, Josh?
I want to. Everyone says I should because I used to work at a Best Buy. And they said, if you worked in retail, you're going to love this show.
I've heard that it is the office of retail. So that, yeah, it has appeal for me, but just haven't gotten around to it.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Fisher as Matt. This is another Disney Channel actor. He appeared in Teen Beach. And he's more recently been in kind of lighter young adult fare, such as Pixar's Turning Red and Netflix's To All the Boys. Larry Fessenden, who I mentioned at the top, is not just a co-writer of this game, but he appears as the stranger.
Welcome, stranger.
Yes. So he is a big name in the horror genre of films. I am not immediately familiar with his work, but he is an actor slash writer who has been involved with lots of films, including The ABCs of Death 2 and Wendigo.
Wendigo?
Wendango?
Like Windigo?
Windigo. Is that what I should have called it?
Yeah. They say that word a lot in this game, too.
Oh, that's right. Well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you about this game in a second.
Okay.
But we have to wrap up on the cast list.
Yeah.
Peter Stormare as the analyst.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming hot off the trails of 1999's Armageddon.
And?
I don't know what else he was in.
Well, he's in the Lost World Jurassic Park.
Oh, my God. He kicks the little dinosaur.
And then they all eat him.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
He's in Big Lebowski. He's one of the nihilists. And then apparently, I didn't know this, he's in Destiny. Did you know this? I don't know who he plays. I don't know if he's the wizard from the
Moon.
Does
he play Peter Dinklage?
Peter Stormare. Lots of Pete's in Destiny.
Right.
But yes, big, big honking cast. Now, Josh, did you play this game at any point before I suggested it for Spooky Games?
Yes, I got this game very close to release date. I was like, this looks fun. This is interesting. I was a huge fan of Quantic Dreams at the time. I loved Heavy Rain. So I was like, oh, well, this has to be something similar to Heavy Rain. And then I was playing it and I was like, oh, did they outdo Quantic Dreams? Like, did they out Quantic Dreams? And you're going to find out in this episode here. But yes, I did play this before. It's still very fresh in my mind, the story, the characters, and the decisions that I've made.
Okay.
How about you?
I didn't know this game. I knew nothing about this game.
Really?
Really. Like, I remember when I booted up my PS5 for the first time and I saw it in the PlayStation Plus library. I was like, okay, I guess that's a famous PS4 game. But I never gave it any concern at all. Mm-hmm. And then when I was trying to like research games to do for this year's Spooky Games Month, I saw it and I was like, oh, I technically own that because it's free.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like every bit of exploring this was shocking because I'm like, they made a video game with Rami Malek? They made a video game with Hayden Panettiere? What is this? I was like, okay.
Are you familiar with the sequel?
I do know about the continuations of this, and we'll talk about that later in the episode.
All right.
But for right now, let's talk about how this game got made.
Okay.
So Josh, well, since we're getting into Spooky Games Month at the top of this, let's ask a question. I don't know if I've ever asked you this in previous years, but like, what makes a good horror game for you?
It needs to make you feel scared. Like,
sure.
Jump scares, I feel, are... it comes with the territory. Are they cheap? Yes, they're cheap. But in a game like this, I feel like it makes so much sense. This pays homage to 70s and 80s horror films, so it only makes sense to try to go with a lot of those tropes that you've seen in the past. I think it needs to give you some sort of fear, some sort of terror, some sort of worry for your characters themselves, too, because if you feel like you can just play the game and like, oh, everyone's going to live at the end of this, or one person might die, but like, you're putting charge of these people's lives.
Sure.
You are put in charge of making sure everybody survives by any means necessary. And I think, yeah, I mean, you need to feel the horror. You need to interact with it. It almost makes it feel like you have to participate in it in order for it to be a great horror game.
Okay. I agree with some angles of that. Absolutely. So like the Resident Evil games, which mm-hmm. you love,
mm-hmm.
do those scare you?
At the time, you figured this was like mid-90s, so I was like just shy of 10 years old. The first one didn't scare me, until towards the end, like when you got the hunters coming after you. Mm-hmm. The second game did scare me because it was a little bit more aggressive. The third one was more of a thriller, I thought. Like you were constantly being stalked by Nemesis and whatnot. And I thought that those three games were great at giving you the idea of a horror movie, but I think they didn't really solidify what horror means until the remakes of 2 and 3, because those remakes are fantastic. Those remakes go ahead and actually give you a true horror game where you are terrified to be in that world.
Okay. So for me, I think I thought about it over the years, especially as we've been doing this yearly. And I think what really gets me in a horror game is it has to unsettle me. Mm. You know, like survival as a kind of gimmick, survival can like make me like tense. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, I get tense trying to survive in Elden Ring. You know, survival is an aspect of a lot of video games.
Yeah.
So that cannot just be the straightforward gimmick. And, you know, horror is very subjective. So like, not everyone's scared the same way. Jump scares work if the volume's loud enough and I'm like, oh, because, you know, it snaps me into my attention. Mm-hmm. But it really has to get to some kind of like sense of like dread or hopelessness or something. And
well, you say unsettling before too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know you talked about when we did Resident Evil 2 that the spiders were very unsettling for you in
because
the sewer.
Spiders suck. Well, that's subjective fear.
Right.
You know what I mean? I legit have a bug phobia. So when I see spiders, the realer they look in video games, the more I'm like, I'm going to puke all over my controller. But, you know, so I just want to have a conversation about that at the top. And then as we get into this game,
yeah,
because I think it'll...
I think a great thing that we should ask at the end of each one of these games is, you know, what was your scare level of the game?
Ooh, scare meter. Okay.
You know what I mean? Because like, it's spooky games month. So like on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, like how scary do you think this game is for people, right?
Okay. Okay.
So maybe that's something we'll, circle around back on. Until Dawn, they made this game.
Yes, indeed, they made this game. And did you know it was originally going to be exclusive to the PlayStation Move?
I could have saw that happening, yes, especially with the sequel that came out, the something of blood, whatever
Rush
it is.
Rush of Blood, I believe it is. So yes, for the kids out there, the PlayStation Move, ask your parents, was Sony's attempt to copy the success of the Nintendo Wii, just as Microsoft had done with the Xbox Kinect. They were trying to jump into the motion gaming market almost as it was beginning to die. Josh, yeah. I have never owned or played with a PlayStation Move controller.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yes.
Give me your thoughts.
I thought it was really good. I thought the motion controls to it were pretty spot on. I think it was I think it controlled a little bit better than the Wii.
Okay.
Which, I mean, you have a couple of years since the Wii launched, you know, you can modify it and make it better for you. I remember there was a game that I used to set up at Best Buy when we had like a little area. I made a demo area for PlayStation Move. And one of the things that I did was it was a Frisbee golf game. And you used the Move controllers like a Frisbee. Like you would actually like act like you were throwing a Frisbee. And the reaction to it was very good. It was very smooth. I haven't played any other games with the Move. I wanted to play some more VR games with it because that's really the only thing that it's meant for right now. Unfortunately, I can't. So, yeah, PlayStation Move was fine. I think it was a little bit better than the Wii. It wasn't supported.
Right. I can imagine just like given the quality of the extra technology I've seen put into it, that mm-hmm. it would be better than the Wii
yeah.
because, you know, you've got so many more tracking points.
You got balls.
You got balls. All you need are balls.
Mm-hmm. So. Just 2 balls in each hand.
There you go. Who doesn't love 2 balls in your hand?
Yep.
We're big fans here. But also we had the Kinect, which I've only ever tried once. My nephew brought it over my house once. And it didn't work at all. I was just like, wow, this is dumb. Like, can't believe they invested in this.
Yeah.
And it was the second version, not the first.
Okay.
What about you? What's your Kinect background?
So I had both versions of the Kinect. I had the original Kinect, and then I had the one that came out that was bundled in with the day one edition of the Xbox One. And the Kinect was fine. I think it was more meant for a younger audience, a younger crowd. Like, yes, they wanted everybody to get up and be active and stuff like that. Video games are not meant for exercising unless you are Ring Fit Adventure. That's the only one that works.
And it does work well. It's good.
Yeah. I mainly used my Kinect for the voice features. I loved being able to say, you know, turn the TV on, turn the TV off, turn the volume up or down, switch over to another game, open up the YouTube app. Like if I'm in the room, it was like kind of like the first rendition of Alexa or Google that you had. And it was only tied to your Xbox. But with the Xbox at the time, being an Xbox One, you could connect that up to everything.
You could connect it to anything?
You could. No, but like you could connect that up to your, like, your receiver, your TV, your home theater system, whatever you wanted to control more things than just your Xbox. It was before its time. The Kinect was the Dreamcast of Xbox inventions. They didn't quit on it like Google did, though. They did see it out for two generations.
Well, regardless of their intentions, this and the PlayStation Move obviously were not accepted very well by the gaming public. So at Gamescom 2012, when this was showcased and confirmed as a Move exclusive, the response from a lot of gamers was boo.
Cricket.
They didn't want to have to buy the Move and its pack-ins. They were like, can't this just be a PS3 game? Because I should also mention this was developed initially for the PS3 as a first-person horror parody. That's what's interesting. This was kind of aimed at a younger audience and it was going to kind of be a little bit not as serious.
Yeah.
So development with the Move started hitting a lot of technical problems, and it took so long that the PS4 was announced. Supermassive Games saw the technology possibilities and they were like, let's just kind of restart and take the best things that we had going, put it on the PS4. And in doing that, they also, according to GamesRadar in 2015, they were like, let's take this from horror for teens and let's turn it into a full-blown, mature, dark horror story. And that became the direction of the game from there. I also found this interesting note in, you know, the same GamesRadar article from 2015. It's from the creative director, Will Biles. And he said, my worst playthrough would be if everyone survived, because that would be dull horror. The best ones are the most gruesome for me. So I think that's really interesting.
That is interesting.
Because something I want to like ask you, do you think this game wants you to save everybody? What do you think the game kind of appeals to the player to do? It gives you choice, but like, I think it's like when I sat down to play this, I thought the game was like, you got to save these guys. They need to be saved.
Right.
It seemed like the game was sympathetic towards them.
Yeah.
But here you have the creative director being like, they all need to die. What do you think?
So I can understand, you know, going through years and years and years of playing games of, you got to keep everyone alive. You know, we covered Sweet Home on this channel twice now, and that game revolves around you keeping everybody alive. You know, you play The Sims, you got to keep everybody alive in The Sims, right? Like, now The Sims isn't a horror game, but when I can see what he's talking about, how it could be dull, but I feel like if that was the case, don't include the therapist appointments then. Because that kind of twisted the dialogue a little bit, or twisted the story in making you think that you should be saving everybody, that you should be going through, and like your character is going a little nuts, right? So like maybe you were the bad one in that scenario, right? If they wanted you to just play the game for what it is, yes, kill everybody. Well, not kill everybody, but do everything that you can. If people die, if he dies, he dies.
I get what you're saying completely. Yeah. So we'll talk about what Josh meant by the analyst in a second, because that's an interesting part of how this game flows. Gameplay and mechanics. This is a third person game where you control a character through tank controls. Josh,
yep.
Your beloved RE tank controls.
I love it. Once I got it, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be great. Because like you said, this is practically a horror parody, right? So like it is doing the parody of older horror games such as Clock Tower, Resident Evil, Silent Hill, all those type of games. So you can see that there was a lot of respect and there was a lot of like a nod or a tip of the hat to those games in general. But yeah, I mean, I love tank controls. I love them. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry, but they're the best.
I hated it. I hated it the second I realized how this game was going to play. I did get used to it to a degree, but there is something like this game.
You
really
say charming.
This
fine.
Game really needed a run button. There's
yes.
You can press L1 to make your character go from a walk to a trot, I guess, is the best. Like, you walk a little faster.
Yeah.
But
it's like the light's getting ready to turn green, so you're like, oh, gotta get across the street.
But yeah, it is painfully slow to navigate some areas. And like, you know, if you kind of get off the critical path and realize, oh, I'm in a bullshit room that doesn't matter, it takes forever to get back. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it sucks some of the fun out of exploring.
Right.
But you walk around, you interact with like various knickknacks scattered around the areas. And some of these will give you clues towards the ongoing mysteries of the game. Some of these will just be kind of flavor text that build up lore in the background for you. But you can also find totems scattered throughout the levels. Now, these are meant to be pieces of like indigenous culture totem poles that tie a lot into some Native American mythology in this game. They'll show you quick visions of the future.
Yes.
Remember what they all were, Josh?
Do I remember what they all were?
Yeah, it was like death, luck.
Death, luck, and there was there three or four?
I think there was four. It was death, luck, loss, and guidance.
Okay. So yeah, because like, the guidance had something to do with the dog at the time.
Right. So that guidance was kind of more of a general hint.
Okay.
It was like, oh, we're going to show you if you do this, what could happen? Loss is like how, I think correct me if I'm wrong. I think
it was a TV show. Yeah, you're correct.
It's also a meme. But I think loss was supposed to be, if this happens, you will get separated from your partner character. Do you think that lines up?
No.
Because death is death.
Yeah.
If you see death, it means the character dies.
But yeah.
What was loss for you?
I mean, loss for me was more of, it was kind of similar to guidance, where it kind of was like, this might be happening in the upcoming moments. So keep this in the back of your mind because you don't want to do this.
Okay.
Like, it was more of a guidance, but it was a what not to do. Because it was very similar, I think, one of the first ones that you run into is with the birds on the fence, before you go up to the cabin. And that was one of them, I think. It was lost there. Whereas, like, you could have had a negative impact because of something with shooting the birds or something, like shooting at the birds or something like that.
Yeah, don't shoot the bird. Yeah.
Don't shoot the bird.
Leave the bird alone.
Leave them birds alone.
And then finally, we have luck, which basically is, hey, if you remember this, something good might happen.
Congratulations. Yeah. Like we talked about with the dog, right? Like, dog was a good part of it, right? Like, the dog saved you, or towards the end with the gas in the fireplace. Like, if you had that, if you turn the gas on, like, you, like, luck, hey, you might blow up these things. They're coming.
All of these are in service of the story. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of go through it. Prologue.
Eight teenagers are going up to a cabin.
So, like,
very similar to Evil Dead, very similar to Cabin in the Woods, very similar to Evil Dead 2, very similar to Cabin in the Woods.
Yep. Thank you for saying Cabin in the Woods.
Hey, no problem. Okay. I got you. I just wanted to get that point across that we were in a cabin in the woods.
Ah, yes. We are in a ski lodge up in the mountains, and the ski lodge is owned by the Washington family. And the children of the Washington family are Josh and his twin sisters, Hannah and Beth. And they're hosting a little weekend getaway with all their friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that this is meant to take place in 2015. So you find a photo as you're walking around of Josh and somebody else at prom, and it says prom 2013. And this prologue takes place a year before the game proper. So I'm meant to assume that like the prologue is in 2014 and then the game is in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So bunch of teenagers, they're hanging out, they're drinking, they're
playing pranks,
they're flirting. And yes, a prank happens. Josh, what's the prank?
The prank was the one girl, the one sister,
Hannah.
Yep, really liked one of the guys.
Mike.
And then
Mike.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to give you the cliff notes here.
We don't do cliff notes on Cast of the Past.
Oh, sorry.
We do biff notes.
So anyway, they play a trick on her, making Hannah think that she is going to get a little friendly with Mike. And it turns out that it was just a scheme the whole time. They got her so good. I was like, you guys got her. No, it was terrible. It was a very mean thing that they did to her. And then she got very upset and ran away, as one would.
Yep.
In the middle of the woods.
I want to talk about the prank because this is the inciting incident of the story. And it really, this probably colored a lot of my opinions of the game.
The fact that all eight people are pretty much terrible?
Yeah. So, I mean, Josh, like we see that Josh is passed out drunk in the kitchen at the beginning of the game. So he's the only one absolved from it. But like to expand on what Josh says, they trick Hannah. They write a fake note that says basically from Mike that's like, hey,
we're going to fuck.
Let's bang.
Yeah.
It was a polite boning request.
Yeah, it was very polite.
We haven't had one a PBR in a while.
I know, ever since the Earthworm Jim incident.
Yeah. But he sends her a polite boning request. She comes upstairs, sees like in the room with Mike, and she starts undressing. And then it turns out like all of the other friends were like hiding in the closet with a camera. They were going to film her without her consent, getting a like, you know, banging.
Yeah.
And so when they kind of all spilled out of the closet and she realized what happened, she runs out of the house in like kind of like shame and anger and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, you guys are all real true assholes.
Yeah. Every single one of these people that you see are like in school, you'd be like, yeah, they're the asshole group.
Exactly. Exactly. So Hannah flees and Beth, her twin sister, who was not in on the scheme, follows her. And all of the friends are kind of like, what are you following her for? Who cares? Let her go. Again, they're all like legit assholes.
Yeah.
So Josh, Beth follows Hannah. What happens?
And that's when you find your first totem to give you an idea of what's to come. And something is in the woods. Something is following her. Something is there. Yes. And they get to a particular point and then they see some sort of a stranger in the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of looks like the Riddler.
Yeah. And he proceeds to make his way closer and closer to them. They panic a little bit and they fall off of a cliff and they die.
They go splat. It's pretty gruesome the way they splat.
Yeah. 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 When you see it in the totem, you're like, oh, well, that's not going to happen because like I'm going to stop that from happening.
Nope.
And then you're like, there ain't no way of stopping that from happening.
Yes. So the twin sisters die and then we flash forward a year and their death has kind of become a little bit of a local news thing, you know, like because they didn't just die, but their bodies were never found.
Mm-hmm.
So we follow Hayden Panettiere's character, Sam, one of the friends, as they're like on a bus going to the lodge because Josh, the brother, played by Rami Malek, has invited everybody back. He wants to have a get-together because, you know, he's been really sad and depressed since his sister's disappeared, and he just wants all of his friends to be together again. So all of the friends are kind of converging at the lodge one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And this starts the first chapter of the game, and it starts, you know, feeding you the choice systems. I did a thing. I try to do this whenever I play choice-based games, but, like, I have, like, Snoop, Explain, Threaten, Persist. I have all these because like those are the keywords. So
yeah.
I'm like next time I go to play, I'm gonna
choose something different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So as all the friends reunite, you start seeing the dynamics play out. And what do you kind of remember, Josh? If I could go over Chris, what is Chris?
He was Chris the main one, the main guy?
I don't know who the main guy in this game is. Honestly,
the one that got separated and was with the dog.
No, that's Mike.
That's Mike. Mike was the main guy.
You consider Mike the main guy?
I consider Mike the main guy.
Interesting.
I mean, Mike would be the main guy followed. I think Josh would be right behind him.
Okay. Of course. Dude, you put yourself up top.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I am number one.
So Mike, what are Mike's characteristics?
Mike characteristics, jock, douchebag, wants to screw everything that's in his sight.
Okay. Chris.
Chris was the nerdy guy. He had glasses, blonde hair, super nerdy. Liked one of the girls, but didn't want to say it out loud.
I think I should also emphasize sexy nerd. No one in this game is not hot. Like, even the guy is supposed to be nerdy.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, man, this guy does.
Hot under the collar.
Ashley.
Ashley was the girl with the beanie.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one that the nerdy guy liked.
Yeah, so girl nerd, basically.
Yeah, girl nerd. She was very nice. She was very sweet. She was probably like one of the purest people in the group.
Mm-hmm. Emily?
Emily was my favorite. I think everyone knew that sentence was coming, though.
The mean girl, it was Josh's favorite.
I think it was one of those things like you just love to hate her. And I think that's why I loved her so much. I thought she was just so great. She acted perfectly. She got the point across of who she needed to be, who she wanted to be. And it came down, and we're going to get into it a little bit later, but there is a pivotal moment with her character that she either lives or dies at. And it's a really good scene.
Matt, Emily's new boyfriend.
I don't remember Matt.
sensitive jock.
Okay.
Is Matt.
Okay. And, oh, yeah, because she like treated him like garbage.
Yeah, she did.
Like, she was making him carry her bags and all that kind of stuff. And he was just like, okay. He reminded me a lot of, what's his name? Justice Smith.
Oh, from Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, okay. He reminded me a lot of him.
Mm-hmm. Josh.
I mean, handsome, bearded, wears a hat all the time. No, you could tell that he was going through a lot of problems and a lot of issues with the death of his sisters. He was a very fun and loving and caring person, and that he just wanted everybody to have a good time.
Yeah, he's not somebody that the second you see him, you don't say, I think he's the villain of this game. Not
no,
at all.
No,
not
no.
at all.
Why? You thinking just Rami Malek just has that look that he's a bad guy?
Let me just put it this way. I don't think I really wonder if you put Josh, Eric Sparrow, and what's-his-face from Jedi Academy in a room, they would all be the same person.
Okay.
And then Hayden Panettiere, Sam. What do you think about Sam?
She is the girl next door who is apparently also the most popular person in school, so it's an oxymoron.
Yeah. Simultaneously relatable, but unattainable, also, I don't know. I don't...
Yeah.
They do. Yeah. So we're getting to some of the problems with this. The characters are either.
They're stereotypes. They're all horror stereotypes.
But yet this game kind of wants you to be invested in their trauma, in their. Like, this is. I'm just going to. We're going to get up front with the fact that maybe Tom didn't like this game. And it's just the fact that, like, the characters are incredibly stock,
mm-hmm.
but the game wants you to invest in them and care for them. And I know this because of how much fucking time this game wastes with segments where it's like, if you make a series of choices, very rude of me, Megan Martin's character, Jessica. What's Jessica?
Not to sound rude, but she was like the slutty girl.
She's the sexy, but yeah. Sexy, but perceived as an
airhead.
When
you see her, you're like, oh, she's the first one to go.
And we're just saying that because, again, we're talking about horror movies tropes. But what I was talking about, Jessica, you know, you make a series of choices, and then Jessica has a long scene where she talks about her insecurities.
Don't even get to see her boobs.
And she's like, people only want to see my boobs. They don't treat me like a person. Josh. So,
yep.
Yeah, this game wants to do too many things. And, you know, it's just with the characters, it doesn't work. So they all get together. They get to the cabin
yep.
or the lodge. There's yep. no power.
Nope.
That's the first kind of sus thing. It's like, Josh, you invited everybody up here, but there's no power. There's no hot water.
It's a bad storm.
That's an accurate impression of Josh in the game, too. That's how Rami Malek talks. So as they're trying to figure out what to do, the first thing Josh does is he tells Mike and Jessica, who are dating, he goes, go to the guest cabin. You have your family owns a fucking ski lodge. Go yeah. to the guest cabin?
Yeah.
And Josh, how far away is the guest cabin?
Oh my God, it was like miles, it felt like.
You spend two chapters of this game walking Jessica and Mike to the guest cabin.
We're practically, it's practically a Lord of the Rings game right now.
I was, tank walking. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And also, I just couldn't help but think, it's like if my friend invited me to their sweet, swanky mansion and then
no
was
power.
Like, Tom, you're going to go into a cabin that's like 3 miles away.
Yep.
I would be like, I'm not your friend anymore.
Well, I got a trip coming up for you at the end of this month.
Mm. So Josh, when you
put
get to
your hiking shoes,
when Mike and Jessica get to the cabin,
yeah.
What happens besides a long scene about Jessica's insecurities?
Yeah. A long scene about her insecurities where you're so close to boning, so close, but then something's there. Something is outside. Spooky. It's being spooky. And at one point in time, I don't know how it ended for you, but Jessica got pulled through a very small window in the front door, and it was not pleasant.
Yeah, it was pretty like body contorting to fit through.
Yeah,
yeah, that is also what happened to me. That was the outcome of my stay yep. at the cabin. Yep.
She got one down. Seven to go. But like I said, I feel like in my playthrough, two people died.
Mm.
She was one, of course. And I don't know if you can save her. I feel like you could.
You can save everybody.
Yeah, she was the first one to go. And I was like, well, shit. Because it was one of those things, like, I just didn't know if it was fate. Like, if it was it was supposed to happen or if not. But yeah, she was the first one gone. Very gruesome. Very unsettling.
That's interesting that we're already considering that she's dead at this point, because I Well, I'll get to something. Mm-hmm. Mike goes after Jessica and he chases her screams. Oh, yeah, that's the thing. She gets pulled through the window, but he's following her screams. So she didn't die for me, at least at that point.
Yeah.
And he follows her screams and he follows her into this mine shaft.
Yep.
There's a big surrounding mine in under the lodge, around the lodge.
Yep.
And he finds her like unconscious on an elevator for me. And instead of like going, this was the thing where like the game really started to piss me off with like, it gives you choices, but the game clearly has predetermined shit that it wants to get to and it doesn't care what you want.
Yep.
So like Jessica's unconscious and I'm like, okay, just pull her off of the elevator. Let's go. No, the elevator falls and she plummets down with it. And Mike's like, Jessica, no. And then there's no option to like check. Like you can't go down the stairs to check on her. Like Mike doesn't bother.
Yep.
He turns his attention immediately to this person he sees and starts chasing after her. And it's almost like, oh, Mike just doesn't give a shit about Jessica anymore.
Yeah.
And so Mike's storyline becomes, I follow the perpetrator into this old abandoned asylum and I'm getting involved in a conspiracy about a mine disaster. And it's like,
yeah. So
what is this?
Mike's story really turned into, he's the one that's bringing you the lore almost of what's going on, what's happening, who's behind everything, while everyone back at the cabin or the lodge is dealing with something else.
Right.
And the something else in the lodge is apparently a serial killer.
Yep. So Mike, as Josh said, conspiracy lore, deep mystery kind of thing. Back to the cabin. Chris, Ashley, and Josh, they play with an Ouija board and it spooks Josh.
I was terrified.
You really? Are you afraid of Ouija boards?
No, I love them. I really want to use one. Becca refuses to let me.
My mom legitimately believes they are tools of the devil and like flip. My wife bought
the devil to you, mama.
My wife bought an Ouija pillow for Halloween. And I was like, you know, if my parents come over, you're going to have to fucking hide that. So there's that.
Is it like when you're laying down, like your head just constantly moves to what the lettering?
That joke was worth the mic cutouts. I play footsie. So we're together on set. I can't put my feet wherever I want. But so Ashley and Chris start trying to find Josh in the house, and then they get attacked by, as Josh said, a mysterious person in a mask.
Yep.
And then Sam's walking around in a towel because she was taking a bath in this pitch black house.
Yep.
And she gets attacked by this person.
Wait, they have no power. Which means that their water heater probably wasn't working.
Oh, there's a whole cutscene of her and him in the basement.
I know.
It's like,
no, because you have to put the baseball bat onto the side of the thing, because the baseball bat's going to come into play a little bit later. If you picked up a totem, it would have told you that you used the baseball bat to fight off the serial killer.
You play an entire water boiler activation mini game in order to get a baseball bat.
It's Dead by Daylight before Dead by Daylight.
Clearly. So they're walking around the house. They're scared. They don't know what's going on. And then Chris and Ashley get captured and they get tied to an almost jigsaw like trap.
Yeah. I liked this
part.
What
was it, Josh?
What?
You said you liked this part. So like go over.
Yeah. So it was those two were kind of put together. They were facing each other.
Yeah.
They're in chairs. They were tied up facing each other. And then you played, I forget which one.
You're Chris. At least you were Chris.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you had to choose which one was going to die and which one wasn't going to die.
Yeah. Chris can either shoot Ashley or kill himself. Oh, and I forgot. This is after, actually, I forgot about this. After Josh gets scared by the Ouija board, he runs out. This is what happened. He runs outside. Chris and Ashley follow him. Ashley gets separated from Chris. Chris tracks Ashley and Josh down to a barn where they're tied up and a buzzsaw is coming at them.
Yeah, I was going to say, hold on a second. Josh was the one that was tied up, because no matter what you choose.
Oh, hang on. We're spoiled. Look, if you're listening to this,
already spoiled one person dying.
Yeah. You either don't care about Until Dawn or you have played Until Dawn.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's an earlier section and I'm getting it out of order because it's so hard to talk about this game in a linear fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to do this.
Because you have so many different storylines happening at one time.
Yeah. Hopefully this resets things. Chris and Ashley chase Josh down after the Ouija board scare. Ashley gets separated from Chris. Chris finds a barn where Ashley and Josh are tied up and there's a buzzsaw coming towards him.
Yes.
And this voice, the serial killer, is like,
you have to choose one or the other.
There you go.
Yep. So one or the other.
So I chose Josh, and Josh died.
Mm-hmm. And I chose Ashley.
You did.
I did.
Why did you pick Josh?
Because did I read ahead a little bit?
Oh, you bitch.
No, actually, cutting to a little bit in the future here, using Ashley, Josh remembers that. And
you just, yeah, but you did. Did you know that the first time? You're saying you knew that the first time.
I wanted to figure out how I could save everybody.
Okay.
And I read ahead. In order to save Josh, you had to kill Ashley. So the thing is, even though I chose Ashley, Josh dies.
Really? So the game. So it, again, what you're saying is it's the game forcing.
Yes.
So you picked Ashley, but the boss saw went to Josh anyway.
Because your character's going, what? No, no, I picked the other one. He's like freaking out. He's freaking out and trying to figure it out.
So this is, so this gets to, man, what I didn't like about this game is that I didn't even know that, but I had other situations like that where this game at the beginning, it's like the butterfly effect. There mm-hmm. can be so many different outcomes, so many different possibilities. No, no, just you have a script that has an ending. And you made a couple different branching possibilities, but they're not. There's no freedom.
But I'm like, so I will get into though the difference of that once we get to that point.
So in my playthrough, I picked Josh, mm-hmm. and Josh dies. Mm-hmm. I picked Josh because he was kind of being a creepy weirdo, and I thought he was going to be the villain.
That's Rami Malek.
Well,
before we knew who he was,
right? I thought he was going to be the villain of the game,
mm-hmm.
and he is the villain of the game.
Is he though?
Well, we'll see. Well, here's the thing. Well, again, it shouldn't be a question, but the fact that the game makes it a question mm-hmm. is like, you're overcomplicating this game.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
So
you're overcomplicating a parody.
Exactly. There you go. So Chris's decision making there leads to a series of events where he and Ashley end up in this jigsaw killer trap where Chris can either kill himself or Ashley. What did you pick?
Himself.
I also picked himself. So that happens and boom, we black out. Cut two. We're now at the storyline of Matt and Emily. So they're going down the mountain to the ski lift station because Emily thinks her bag's there. And oh, shit, someone fucked up the ski lift. How are they going to get off the mountain? Oh, my God.
That's it.
So
we're stuck here forever.
Matt deduces that there is an emergency radio tower, a fire watch tower. Call back to a previous game.
Yep. Yep.
And so he and Emily go up it. And somebody with a machete, cuts a cable and it causes the whole fucking tower to fall over. Now I am not a physics man.
Nope.
I am not a firewatch tower builder.
You cannot question it then.
But like,
you can't question it.
Are those things so perilously built that one cable being cut will bring an entire thing down?
So, I mean, we played a game called Firewatch and an entire forest fire took one down.
But
why can't a cable take one down?
No, this is not a...
No, I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's the case. It doesn't seem like that's the thing, but...
And look, I
think it's just added effect.
I'm not trying to be a CinemaSins asshole. I believe in the power of suspension of disbelief. I was just kind of like, that must have been the shittiest tower ever if that happened. But anyway.
Yep.
So it falls, and Emily and Matt fall with it, and the tower falls into one of these mine shafts, and... Emily and Matt end up down there, but they don't end up down there together for long because for me, Matt gets quickly killed. Did that happen to you?
No, Matt was alive for me.
So I did not give Matt the flare gun. I had Emily keep the flare gun. So Matt didn't have anything to defend himself when he was picked up by a mysterious figure and his head was put through a meat hook.
Yeah.
So that's another one down.
I gave him the flare gun. I think he uses the flare gun to fend them off.
Mm-hmm. Now we're just Emily down to the mine, but for you, it's both of them, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's discovered in the mine?
Is that, it's not the stranger, right?
Well, for me, yeah, Emily found the stranger.
Okay, yeah, so that's...
And Emily also found Beth's head.
Yeah.
Or Hannah's head. They're twins.
I know. It was one of the girls.
Yep, she finds the decomposed head, but not the body.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? It is Beth's head because she also finds a little kind of grave marker that says Beth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's creepy.
Yep.
And then the stranger chases her around the mine for a bit. And just when you think all is lost, the stranger's trying to help. What? What happened with you with both of them when the stranger came up? Did that happen?
The same thing.
Okay.
It
so
was
the same thing. Like, of course. So tell me what happened there.
So there was noises in the mine shafts, right? And the stranger is pretty much trying to divert what is coming after them right now by the tools that they had just to try to get the two out of there, just to try to get the two out of the mines to a safe haven as much as they possibly could.
And that safe haven ends up being the lodge, because Emily and or Matt get back with Mike and Sam, who were reunited with some fucking shenanigans. I don't have time right now.
Yep.
And Chris and Ashley end up, oh, they're both fine. The gun that Chris shot himself with was filled with blanks.
Yep.
Because who was behind all of the torture and shenanigans that Sam, Chris, and Ashley experienced?
It was me all along.
Yes, it was Josh, who was using the fact that, I guess I should have mentioned this up top, his father is a famous horror movie director. So their house was filled with a lot of costumes and props and stuff. And basically, Josh decided to invite all of his friends back to the cabin so that he could play a bunch of fucked up tricks on them.
Because of what they did to his sisters.
And I was like, what a twist. And that's actually pretty compelling and interesting. But the game like completely villainizes Josh for it. It's like he's not justified at all. It's the poor people who tried to sexually exploit his sister that went through all this stuff.
Yeah.
So Mike and Chris take Josh out to the shed and they leave him tied up there. And they're like, fuck you. We'll deal with you in the morning. And when they come back to the lodge, the stranger is now there because they were brought, you know, they followed Emily back or whatever.
So let me put a pin there.
Yeah.
As you're tying up Josh, he has a conversation with Chris.
It's basically like Josh keeps talking about how, oh, because Mike is like, you killed Jessica. You killed Jessica as part of your stupid thing. And Josh is like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I didn't do anything to Jessica. And Chris is kind of like, I believe Josh. You know what I mean?
No, but I'm saying like the dialogue between Josh and Chris, though, is a little bit different in my playthrough because I chose Ashley to die.
So tell us what happens because I don't
know. So like as they're doing it, Josh and Chris are having a conversation and like Chris is like being like he's trying not to bring up that situation that happened. And Josh is like, I know what switch you pulled. I know. And I just want to say thank you. Like he was like being very nice to him. He's like, I'm not angry at you. I'm not like he was like giving like he was it was a weird manipulation type thing that he was doing. But you can tell that he was just genuinely he cared about him as Chris as a person, as a friend or anything along those lines because he wanted to save him.
But it still is fucked up because that Josh still made Chris go through that horrific moral choice.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like Josh deciding to like get even with everybody in a non-violent way, which is what his plan was. I was like, you know what? This is totally justified. And I think it'd be a lesson well learned for everybody. But the game is like, makes it like Josh bad. Mm-hmm. Josh did bad thing. And it's like everybody else good. So it's again, the problem this game has with like who it expects me to sympathize with. But we get back to the lodge. Mm-hmm. The stranger's there.
Yep.
He unmasks. He's just a dude. Normal dude with a flamethrower.
Just normal guy. Just living out. Just a normal guy with a flamethrower. Yep.
Living in mines, you know, like we all do. And he tells everybody, you don't realize what's been unleashed up here. This lodge, which through flavor text and stuff you learn was built on, you know, Native American land, is cursed.
Yep.
And it's cursed by what kind of creature, Josh?
The Wendigos.
Yes.
See, we come right back to it, guys.
Yes. So he says that because somebody on this mountain committed the sin of cannibalism, the Wendigos have been awakened and they're out for blood. And that becomes the game from here becomes a monster horror survival game.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
let's talk about the end.
What did you think about
it? It doesn't work.
You don't like that they brought the Wendigos in?
I feel like
a lot of games like, do that supernatural effect, right? We talked about Uncharted.
Yeah, but my problem is that like this starts as
Uncharted
a
was Wendigos too.
Oh, it was kind of it was like a zombie thing.
Yeah.
But like my problem with this game is that it starts as a slasher and turns into a monster movie and it doesn't, and there's also a decades old mystery criminal conspiracy and it doesn't.
Don't forget the psychologist.
Oh my God. It's so forgettable, but it's actually bad when it happens. So in between, I should have mentioned, in between every chapter of this game on a mountain with teenagers, Peter Stormare shows up as Dr. Hill, the analyst as he's called. And in a first-person segment, he asks you, it seems like it's you, the player, he asks you questions about what's been happening. He's like, did you like when Mike did this? And you can say yes or no. And he's like, which character do you prefer? And he holds up two pictures and you pick. Or he's like, what are your fears? And basically you ask questions that I kind of feel are like really lame telegraphs of what's to come. It's kind of like, you know, oh, the game is like saying, do you like an apple or an orange? And if you pick orange, guess what's going to show up in the next act? A bunch of apples.
So, you know what I mean? So the thing is, though, one thing that I noticed is if I was choosing something different than what I would have normally chose, he reacted as if I wasn't telling the truth. And I thought that was a really cool thing. It was like, why are you doing that? Like, he would almost like scold you for like not taking it serious.
But it's so disruptive to the experience, because it seems when it starts, like he's breaking the fourth wall and talking to us, you know, Tom and Josh. He's like, oh, this little game you're playing. Oh, do you like what you're doing to these people? And
but he's then, not. You know, well, he's talking to one of us.
Well, as it goes on, I'm just going to spoil it. This whole analyst thing is a hallucination in the mind of Josh. Mm-hmm. Josh, like, that's his actual therapist that he was seeing to get over the death of his sisters, but he's hallucinating that the therapist is there with them at the lodge and that Josh is seeing him to talk about how his plan has been going. But it's so fucking disruptive and unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, I feel like it telegraphs stuff.
I think that would have been a great DLC.
Sure, but intertwined with the experience, bad.
Because as that's happening, like as those scenes are happening, then it could have cut to that part of the game. Right. And then like if they release like a game of the year edition or a complete edition or something like that, sprinkle them in. Yeah. But as a DLC, make that just one like a quick, 5-10 minute experience or something like that, just to kind of get through that whole, maybe a half an hour at most, to get through the whole entire situation. Mm-hmm. And then like show you where it fits in to the story and whatnot. Show you Josh's side of the story rather than the other seven characters.
Okay. Yeah. No, I agree. That actually would have been more beneficial to what they wanted to do. Because as is, like I said, this game starts as Scream and ends as The Thing. And in the middle, you have a bunch of like LA Confidential, Chinatown conspiracies about corporations burying tragic, you know, it's kind of like, you can't, all this shit does not go well together.
You are just throwing a whole bunch of shit at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Wendigos, the Winnebagoes, I'm very sorry. The Winnebagoes. I'm not trying to disrespectfully mispronounce that.
Wendigos.
Yes, the Wendigos. What happens as the characters deal with these, Josh?
So one of the most craziest parts of the game, Emily actually gets bit by one of the Wendigos. Mm-hmm. And you are left with the biggest moral choice of the game, I feel like it was. Do you kill Emily or do you not kill Emily?
I killed Emily.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, but Emily was a bitch. And I was just like, all right, I can't handle this anymore.
I did not kill Emily.
Okay.
And the reason I didn't kill Emily was because I found a book earlier in the game that says that a Wendigo's bite is not infectious.
I did not know that.
Yes.
And let me just clarify. I'm not saying I shot her because she was a bitch.
That's if we ever talk about, oh, I don't want to spoil this for you.
Fine. Well, wait. Never mind. I'm saying
if we ever talk about Life is Strange.
Okay. All I'm going to say is, I was under the assumption that the infection would cause her to change. And I was like, well, she's also a bitch. So it made the decision easier.
No second guessing. No.
Go ahead.
You find a book. I don't know if you find the book before or after you kill her or you go to kill her.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I didn't kill her. She did not get infected because they are not infectious at all. They are just creatures of
the night.
Creatures of the night. And that was probably the hardest decision I think in the game, because it was very intense. Like everybody's yelling at you, who's gonna kill, who's not gonna kill, why she doesn't want to die. Like you can tell though, after that moment her character switches a little bit. And her character actually becomes a little bit nicer. Her character becomes a little bit more.
Whoops.
No, yeah. Like she becomes like she becomes like the person that she should have been.
She has new perspective.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I did not allow her to get that.
Yeah. Well, so. She has new perspective in your game, too.
It's a dark and silent perspective. So it all comes to a head in the mines, mm-hmm. where we find out that Hannah, survived the fall and survived in the mines by eating the corpse of her sister Beth. So yep. That is the act of cannibalism that started all of the supernatural chaos. And everybody, you know, works together with who's left, or depending on who's left, who was left alive to work together at the end of your thing.
The only person I didn't have with me was Jessica.
So you had Mike, Chris, Josh,
yep,
everybody.
I had everybody. Right. So the big ending, the big finale, where they're all in the lodge together. Actually, so Josh got taken out.
Josh gets trapped in the mines.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a little bit to be like a self-sacrifice.
But not really. Like, that goes into a little bit more of the ending to it. So I had all of them. And like I said, Josh, at my point in time, Josh was in the mines. I didn't know if he was alive or dead yet. But I had everybody alive to the grand finale of everybody in the cabin. The shitload of Wendigos are breaking through and trying to murder everybody. But they only work with sound. So think about the movie The Descent. This is the best way to describe what a Wendigo is for people. And at the very end, there is one choice that you have to do where you have to keep your controller as completely still as possible.
That was a good mechanic, by the way.
Yes, I did like that. Because it was like you had to like hold your breath almost.
Mm-hmm. That's a don't move prompt, and if the controller shifts at all, you're fucked. And you don't really have time to put it down.
Yep.
So you gotta hold it.
If you put it down, the game recognizes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I put it down and Hayden Panettiere got fucked up. Oh man, did she die? So Hayden Panettiere was the last person that ended up getting killed in my game because I sat the controller down thinking, oh, I'm going to outsmart this game. And the game's like, oh, we outsmarted you, you son of a bitch. That's what happened to me. Yeah, I mean, well, how many are alive at your time? I mean, you already shot Emily.
It was Sam, Mike, Chris, Ashley, and that's it for me.
Okay.
Because Mike just gave up on Jessica.
Yeah.
Matt died. Emily died, and I don't think I'm forgetting anybody else.
So
at this point
inside the actual lodge, leading up to this grand finale, Hayden Panettiere or Mike, one of them kicks open like the gas for the fireplace to be the lid on. And what they were going to do is they were going to actually spark pretty much
up.
Kill them all, blow them up and stuff like that. And it still works. We blew up the cabin. All the Wendigos were dead. But depending on what you did throughout the game, if Josh gets killed, all the Wendigos die.
Interesting.
Right? So they're all going to be dead. However, if he survives at the end, he gets possessed by a spirit of the Wendigo.
Yes.
And he will continue living on as a Wendigo in the mine.
The end thing I got is like similar to that where, Josh is trapped in the mines because that's part of like the escape from...
He's down there, and like I think his sister was with him.
And I thought he eats a corpse, and that's how he starts turning, because he's also trapped down.
Yeah, I don't remember that part. Is a little hazy, but I do know that Josh came back. He was possessed at the end of my game.
Yeah, so that's the kind of the tease to maybe there's going to be more. And hey, there could be more. I mean, how famous Rami Malek is, they could probably do a sequel to this with him as the bad guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's
Until the quarry now. We got the quarry.
But dawn finally comes.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever survives. And that is the end of this adventure.
Ta-da.
What a clusterfuck, I think.
Yeah.
What do you like about it? Go ahead.
I mean, I like the horror tropes. It was very similar to how I like the movie Cabin in the Woods, right? Like, it is a parody on it, but it does it in a way that makes you want to laugh. Might also scare you at times, too, but it's not a joke. Like, it's not a comedy, right? It's played up so much that... like, this could be something that could potentially happen to you and your friends. I'm not saying the whole prologue, right?
The prologue? Unless you're a piece of shit, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, unless you're a piece of shit, yeah. But, I mean, I liked just that it was a horror movie. It was just a cheesy horror movie. And that's probably the biggest takeaway that I had from it. Like, the twist of Josh being the killer, I liked it. Because his ideas behind it, you can see where he wasn't trying to be a bad guy in the situation. But the things he did, the thing is, he didn't kill anybody.
No.
Right? He just scared the shit out of them the same way that they did to his sister.
Well, he didn't sexually exploit anybody, but, you know, he fucked with them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hayden Panettiere was wearing next to nothing at the time when he attacked her.
Right. So I guess a little bit of his plan did involve tasting your own medicine.
What about you?
It's the problem that it's too much. It's too much for one story to handle. And it's also for me the fact that, like, you know, the developer of the game is like, in my opinion, the best outcome is they all die. Then, like, put me in the role of the slasher.
Yes.
Like,
give me a reason to kill all of them. Like, honestly, if you would have known that it was Josh from the beginning and you knew what he was going to do, right?
It would work way better.
Right.
The fact, because, like, the beginning of this game immediately makes every character except Josh unsympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I find no redeeming qualities. Like, people make mistakes. I'm not saying one choice means you're
redeemable. You need to die.
But in the presentation of this game,
yeah,
it's like all these characters are ugly. Keep them alive. And I'm kind of like, well, they're all two-dimensional stock characters. So the only thing I know about them with dimension is they did something bad. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to live.
Yep.
And then, but then you're in a high stakes situation about survival. And I'm just like, how fast can they die? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
And so it doesn't work because, like, the game is like, there's danger, but I'm rooting for the danger. So mm-hmm. make me the danger. Make me Heisenberg, you know, or something. It's just like,
well, so let's say they mark this game up as you are the killer in this world, right? Mm-hmm. The things that you do for these characters will set up the potential for them to die. That would be great.
Yeah.
Right. And then at the end, the psychiatrist visits.
Take them out of the game.
No. Keep them in the game. Mm. Build up the mystery of why are you seeing these things to at the end find out that you are Josh. And then the reasoning that you're doing this or did this, like, he could be explaining to the psychiatrist why he did what he did. And that could be the way that the game would end.
Okay. But, you know, it's just like, it's like half the game you're running from Ghostface and then the other half of the game the thing shows up. And it's just kind of like,
yeah,
whoa. Yeah. All the rules you thought you were following, fuck them.
Yeah.
Not doing this. And it also doesn't help that the writing, and so you said cheesy, and cheesy is a word because the writing in this game can be pretty rough at points.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing this and I was kind of like, I thought like this would be a game that I'm sure Mary would love to play because she would love the interactivity of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then she overheard me. There's a scene where Emily and Jessica get into a fight in the lodge and Emily is like, oh, I'm sorry. Could you not hear me over your sluttiness? And Mary like leans in from the other room and she's like, what are you playing? Like that was so cringe. And
that was a great burn.
there's so much of the writing in this of like horror movies are not like grand novels. I get that. Shitty horror dialogue. I like a lot of it. It's just like, again, the game spends all this time trying to get you to care about the characters by having them talk in ways that normal people wouldn't talk.
Yeah. Cut to Life is Strange once again.
Okay.
The people who made that game are trying to decide how 16-year-old girls talk. Like, it's
right. I said this earlier. Just pick a lane. If this mm-hmm. is supposed to be a tense character drama about revenge, just make it that. If this is supposed to be a cheesy parody where goofy stock characters get killed in gruesome ways, just do that. You can't have it all.
Yep.
And this game, for me, it tried to have it all.
Yep.
But I am in the minority. Let's talk about the legacy, because a lot of people liked this game.
I mean, I understand why people would like it, though. It was something different, right? At the time, what did we have? We had Until Dawn.
Until Evening.
Yeah. No, at the time, we had Heavy Rain, and I think we had Beyond Two Souls, right?
That's the Elliot Page one.
Yes. Yep. Yes. With Willem. So Heavy Rain is great. I love Heavy Rain. Okay. I know it has aged poorly over time. And I know Quantic Dreams is not the nicest people David Cage, I'm sorry, is not the nicest people.
Didn't he do the Detroit game? Was that after this?
Yes.
Okay.
Detroit was after this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I like that. Beyond Two Souls came out. I hated that game so much. I just did not like. That was one of those games like I just want this to be over. And then we didn't have anything for a little bit. And then Until Dawn came out, and I was like, oh, this is a breath of fresh air. This is a choose your own adventure horror game. that's very similar to Heavy Rain. And I was down for it. That's why I picked it up. I played it. I enjoyed it. I mean, I really liked what I was playing of the game at the time. I think it controlled fine. I think the decisions were creative. I liked the butterfly effect. There's a lot of good things in this game that's just surrounded by a half-assed horror story.
So the way this game, honestly, it blew up. That's how this game's release happened. Mm-hmm. Sony themselves, I saw in a VG247 article from 2015 that Sony themselves were surprised by the success of the game. This overperformed in their eyes.
Yeah.
And they were especially pleased with the fact that this blew up in the online streaming community in a big way.
Yep.
This was the top trending game on YouTube the month of its release. And, you know, streamers hosting pick-along sessions, choice-making sessions with their audiences was very big when it came out. So that led to a lot of, you know, acclaim. It was nominated at the 2015 Game Awards and Golden Joystick Awards, and it won a BAFTA Game Award for Best Original Property. You mentioned this earlier, but there were two PlayStation VR follow-ups for this game.
There's
Until Dawn, Rush of Blood,
which was a on-rail shooter where you were inside of like a little bit of a carnival cart or like a mine cart type thing.
Okay.
And you had to shoot Wendigos and that kind of stuff as they were coming and attacking you while you were in this cart.
It's really interesting. So how much of a game can you get out of that?
It was a PSVR title, so it was like only like an hour to 2 hour long thing. Like, it was very similar to like you were going to the arcade and playing Time Crisis.
Oh, okay. All right. And then the second follow-up was a prequel called The Inpatient. This takes place 60 years before Until Dawn, and it's set in the asylum when it was opened.
Okay.
So you are a patient at the asylum, and you're unraveling the conspiracy about the Wendigos. Both games received mixed reviews. But so you wanted to do the scare meter, Josh. So,
yeah.
So on a 1 to 5, 1 being not
Teletubbies.
Teletubbies, and 5 being student.
The Teletubby son.
Excellent. Yes. How scary was Until Dawn for you?
Until Dawn was, for me, at particular moments, I give it a 3 out of 5 in the scarometer, spooky game, scare-tacular. I want to consider it in the Teletubby scale, the Nunu, which was their vacuum cleaner that they had, where it's like, you don't know if he's going to become self-aware and attack you or not, but you also kind of like him. You know what I mean? There's the same thing with this game. Like, I kind of find the charm a lot in this game, but also I don't know if I'm going to die and if I go around the next corner.
I'm learning so much about you. So for me, I honestly, I got to give this like a 1.
Okay.
1.5.
You weren't spooked at all?
Like I said, when I talk about it, when the game unsettled me.
Yeah.
It unsettled me when I thought this was like a serious slasher kind of thing, and I was making actual moral choices about who I was going to let live or die. And then once it turned into a monster thing, I was not scared at all. It was like jump scares where I would go, ugh. Once they took the whole like crisis of choice out of it, I was, this isn't scary.
You didn't think that, you know, you would talk about unsettling and stuff like that. One of the best mechanics that we mentioned was holding the controller super still.
That was tense.
Okay.
And I liked that.
Okay.
But no, didn't do it for me.
Well, there you hear it. 3 out of 5 for me in the spookometer, and 1.5. Out of 5.
Tinky Winky's purse for me. Not scary.
No, not scary at all. More useful than anything.
Exactly.
Right?
I guess.
But at the end of the day, would you skip, play, complete, or master? I would skip it.
I would absolutely skip this. This is one of the hardest skips I've ever recommended.
The only reason I would recommend skipping it is I would recommend watching a stream of it or getting a group of people together and having somebody play it while everyone shouts out what you should do and what you shouldn't do. I think it's a great party game.
Hmm. Maybe that could give me a new appreciation for it, but I mean, just go watch a good horror movie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's better slasher films out there. Not to say that the mocapping and the acting wasn't great in this game. That's actually some of the best stuff.
Sure.
I think this lives up as a very good next gen continuation of where horror games and where story driven games are going to be going in that narrative focus. But at the end of the day,
and hey, they all got paid, you know, yeah, so they're fine.
They got paid more than we did for it.
Exactly.
But that has been it for this episode of Cast to the Past. I hope you enjoyed us talking about Until Dawn. Let us know what you think of Until Dawn, though. Put it into the comments and, you know, like and subscribe and do all that fancy stuff that you come here to see.
And whatever podcast platform you may be enjoying this on, please give us a review. We only know what you want if you talk to us. So please
give us recommendations on games, too.
Exactly. Tell us what scares you.
Yeah.
Which Teletubby are you afraid of?
Oh.
We won't get to that here.
Yeah.
But until next time.
This has been Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And we will see you in the future.
While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, or future of gaming, check out Bad Elephant Gaming on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And don't forget to watch our other videos on YouTube, where we bring you gaming experiences you'll never forget.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun. Come chat with us anytime at twitch.tv/badelephantgaming.
Thanks for listening.
And until next time, we'll see you in the future.